Blog Talk Radio.
Less detail the podcast on a Wednesday night, December 11th, 2013. I'm Dre. He's Jay. We got NFL week number 14 recap to look at. Do I really want to recap week 14 after the record that I put up? You know what? What do I have to offer? I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Jason, take it away.
Well, you know, last week you started the show. And the story of the week, of all the football stories out there, the story of the week was you picked up three games on me and you were feeling it. You know, you started the year so bad, with a 9-game deficit to me. You spent the next 12 weeks clawing your way back. You got the 3 games back one time, and then last week you got the 4 games back, and you were feeling it. And in 1 week you managed to give all of it back. And then some, and yes, that 6-10 on your end was a 12-4 on mine, and you're now sitting 10 games behind me here with 3 weeks to go. So, to me, that's the story of the week. I tried out a theory, and it worked, about cold weather teams hosting dome teams and teams from some warmer climates. Went against me twice where I split on the two where I went against it because I had Atlanta going into Green Bay and covering, which they did, and then I had Oakland going to the Jets. I tried to pick out the bad home teams there that I thought were ripe, and Miami was the other one that jumped out there with the Keystone Cops play that they had there at the end of that game, which was just bizarre. A lot of bizarre football, but it was real football. It was snow and it was cold. And it was fun to watch because you saw all these teams out of their element. And the NFL still managed, even with all the horrible weather, to set a record for touchdowns scored in 1 week. So clearly the weather wasn't hampering offenses, but it was hampering teams that were not used to playing in those conditions or that practice in those conditions. So to me, it was one of those almost – what do you take away from a week where nothing looks normal? You know, are teams really as good as they looked or as bad as they looked with the weather? Washington's a mess. I'm sure we'll talk about the RG3 situation. The Lions are a mess. They've now turned that division into a 3-team race, which is really interesting considering they just had that handed to them on a silver platter. And there's a road to the division win for all three teams, the Lions, the Bears, and the Packers, and it's just completely mind-blowing. What did you see while you were getting curb-stomped this week?
I'll give you one more win. What the hell? I consider, you know, Nashville, Tennessee, not exactly a place that's used to cold weather. It's not tropical and, you know, sunny all the time like Miami, but Tennessee going into Denver with the whatever 7-degree, 12-degree weather and Peyton Manning saying, cold air? What cold air? Bad arm? What bad arm? And just destroying Tennessee after Tennessee had the lead at halftime in that one. You know what I saw? What stuck out to me was it seemed like all of those noon games with the terrible conditions and the snowy fields and in a couple of situations, Philadelphia most prominent. It seemed like what had happened was the real speed athletes, the guys that have that combination of, you know, athleticism and pure speed, because there's a lot of pure speed guys. I'm not talking about like, you know, the Oz Akeems from back in the day that just had nothing but speed, didn't really have any other football skills. I'm talking about like Sheedy McCoy, Cordero Patterson, Jacoby Jones, guys who actually have athleticism and speed. It seemed like they all kind of figured out around the second half of their games all at the same time, hey, wait a minute, I can make some moves on this crap out here, and the defenders don't have a chance in hell of catching me because they don't know where I'm going. Only I know where I'm going. If I go straight ahead as fast as I can, and then every time a defender gets within my five-yard radius, I just make like one little shake move, and they're just completely gone. Their feet just go out from under them and just go head over heels, topple right over. You know, I can do this all day. And it was crazy. Shady McCoy ran for, what was it, 140-some-odd yards in the fourth quarter alone? I mean, he wasn't doing that all day. He just got this idea in his head, hey, wait, I can stick one foot in the ground and take straight off up ahead, and nobody's going to catch me because they can't get their footing in this stuff. So that's what stuck out to me, was that the real athletes really took over when the second half came and they kind of got their wits about them. They all, like, at once kind of decided, ooh, I could really make some shit happen out here in this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we used to, I mean, we never really played real football, but we played in the snow after school, and we played in some pretty deep stuff. And what you're saying is absolutely correct, is the defense is always reacting to the offense. And on a slower track like that, in the muck, in the snow, they're even slower to react. You know, the offense, exactly. The guy knows where he's going. The guy knows what route he's going to run. The guy knows what hole he has to hit. And there were players that were just running completely free. And it was just amazing to watch because I'd never seen a weekend of bad weather like that impacting so many cities at the same time, with whether it was cold, whether it was ice, whether it was a snowstorm, just everything just so affected. This is a real deep freeze. I mean, we're still under it here. I don't know how bad it is down by you, but, you know, we didn't get above zero today. So it's really
it's not
cold.
That bad.
No, well, I wouldn't expect it to be that bad by you, but here we did not make it above zero. We hit 8 below, 12 below. We had some really, really cold weather here, and it doesn't appear that it's going to break. We have a heat wave coming this weekend, and it's going to be 15. I might have to break out.
Whoa!
It's something. So for early November, there's a lot of places that are really under the gun with the weather, and it made this a fun week. Just to watch, you know. I was at one of the games. I'll talk about that a little bit in the after show. I was at that Atlanta Green Bay game. Definitely an experience, being at such a cold game. By far, it's got to be the coldest, some of the coldest I've ever been in my life. And basically by choice, you know, I volunteered to go do that. I was like, hey, let's go. We bought tickets, and we saw the weather, and we're just like, damn it, we paid for these tickets. We're still going to go. And wow, was it cold. So I can only imagine. And these guys down on the field, you know, at least they've got, like, you know, those heat benches and the big jets that blow the heat at them. And they've got that. No, the fans, they did not have that. You were left to the elements out there. So It was an experience, so I'm sure it was an experience for all the players. That Philadelphia-Detroit game was probably the one that I didn't get to watch the game. But just seeing the highlights, I was like, man, that's football. It should be that way all the time. I hope it snows like that for the Super Bowl this year, because that's what I want to watch.
Oh, God, you want to watch snaps going past the quarterback's head and snaps being bobbled and fumbled everywhere and slipping around and sliding and all of that? You really want to see all that?
Yeah, of course. Because, you know, I mean, I love the whole chaos of it all. You know, I love the unpredictability of things. And that's the ultimate element that you cannot control. You can call the play, you can run your route, you can call your defense, but you cannot game plan for a foot of snow, or a guy slips on the turf, and where the ball pops out because it's cold, and it really just is that sort of X factor, Mother Nature. All too often we have these Super Bowls, and they're always in perfect conditions. Sometimes the teams that got there because the conditions weren't perfect. And I'd really like to see something that's that great equalizer. Let's really see how good you are. See how good the two best teams in the league can play in some crap. That's what I want to see on the Super Bowl.
You very well might get your wish. On the off chance that anyone's listening live, if you want to call in and get into the football conversation, our number is area code 646-595-4534. Now we talked about a little bit about the Philly game. Like you said, that was probably the worst of all the games. It was 6 to 8 inches of snow out there. It was just fumbles and snaps and just a big pot of garbage out there in that slop. I did notice one game that didn't follow that little theory I had of getting to the second half and discovering that you can be more athletic and make plays out there. Kansas City didn't wait until the second half. They bent Washington over from the get-go, from the jump, and just started screwing them right there on the field. They didn't have to wait. Everyone knows how I feel about Kansas City. I still, am less than impressed with them, but there's no denying what they did to Washington. They did exactly what you predicted that they would do, which is get back on the winning track, take a much lesser team than them, and just have their way with them all day up and down the field.
This is what the Chiefs do. Sometimes we use this term in baseball a lot more, just if you can handle the bad teams and just be respectable against the good teams, you'll make the playoffs. Being a Cubs fan my whole life, we would sweep the best team in the league, and then we would go play the Expos and get swept by them. So it wasn't so much that, you're getting up. The one thing I will say for the Chiefs that I have not really seen them do, every team does it once in a while, though. I will tell you, well, they're well coached because that team does not play to the level of its competition. The Chiefs, they're not quite as good at this as Seattle is, but the Chiefs, they get somebody who they can just throttle, And they put one on them, and they did that a lot early. They kind of sagged a little in the middle of the season. And then, of course, they had this three-game stretch with the three losses, but, of course, two of those were to the Broncos, so you can't really blame them for that. But I had a feeling they were ready to take out some of that frustration, and boy, did they do that. They were in the 30s by halftime, and then they could just coast right to the end of that game. That was just a full-on blowout. And that has sort of springboarded all of this RG3, Kirk Cousins, Mike Shanahan drama that is it's sad, it's laughable, it's completely mind-boggling what's going on and what the train of thought is for Mike Shanahan, who is not, we're not his biggest fan. We've that's well documented. But you want to talk about a guy who's just coasting on his laurels from two Super Bowls 15 years ago, and that's the guy. He's done nothing since. And I don't know how your feelings are about this with the benching of RG3, but makes no sense to me. Makes absolutely no sense. I'm hearing reasons, but none of them make sense. They're trying to showcase Kirk Cousins for a possible trade. Really? This is why you're gonna bench your franchise quarterback. Guy gave his body to this team last year, came back a little too soon, still in my opinion, this year. But you gotta let this guy play through. The fans are gonna want to see it, even if they're booing. You want to be there, or you want to see this guy when he kind of figures it out. You'd like to finish the season on a high note if you're RG3, and he's gonna finish the season on the ultimate low note. Throw Kirk Cousins out there. Who knows? Maybe he'll do well, which will just make this even worse. Makes no sense to me, and Mike Shanahan's going to get fired. This is no doubt in my mind. He's done.
No, you hit on it when you said the train of thought. What is going through his mind to make him do something like that? Because what else could you be thinking by benching the young starting quarterback for the last three games of the season, except you're trying to get fired? Nobody does this. Can you imagine if the Cubs were out of the playoff race as they, I guess, normally are, so are my White Sox, but say the Cubs are out of the playoff race, but 3 weeks before the season ended, in early September, they decided that we really need to rest our young star, Starlin Castro, because we don't want to risk him getting injured. We're not going to play him the last 3 weeks of the year, even though he's relatively healthy, because we just don't want to take that chance that he might get injured and wind up having an off season recovering from an injury, which exactly, you know, hurts who if he's hurt during the off season. Exactly what damage does that do? You know, what are you doing? You know, so not only the whole concept of robbing the paying customers of seeing, you know, a young star, but just the whole, you know, ridiculous concept in general of let's not risk somebody getting injured the last 3 weeks of the season, somebody who's young and you know, not a old veteran that's hobbling around, you know, and relatively healthy. It just makes no sense, like you said. And that also doesn't even speak to the competitive imbalance. You know, I don't know. I haven't looked at the Redskins' schedule. I don't know who else they're playing the last 3 weeks, but those teams just, they get to see Kirk Cousins now instead of RG3. That's, you know, ostensibly a big downgrade. That should help them, you know, if Kirk Cousins doesn't play to the level that RG3 is capable of, which RG3 himself has not been playing to. So that's something you could kind of argue, but nonetheless, it's still just, it's unprecedented. I can't really think of anyone else that's done something like that, you know, deactivate somebody that's healthy because you want to protect them. This isn't a, was a T.O. Or somebody else, maybe Keyshawn Johnson as well, that got deactivated by their team when they were healthy, but that was because they're being an asshole, not because they're trying to protect them from themselves. They're trying to protect their bodies or something. This is completely unheard of, and I don't think there's any other conclusion to draw except Shanahan is trying to get himself fired so he can get his money from the last year of his contract from next year.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because this ties into the baseball analogy really well to another angle. You know, you with the pitchers, and you will see pitchers shut down, especially young pitchers. They're logging too many innings. They don't want to blow these guys' arms out. So there is that train of thought out there in baseball that says, yeah, you know what? You know, there's a lot of Tommy John surgery out there. A lot of guys develop these arm issues, pitching and throwing a ball 100 miles an hour, in some cases very violent motion. So we're going to rest the guy. You know, he's already, you know, in baseball again, though. That's a 162-game season. These guys are going to be out there every fourth or fifth day pitching. That doesn't apply here, but that's part of the, you know, I'm hearing all these different excuses. Like, the decision was made. It's a bad decision. And then all the apologists start, you know, like the spin machine starts churning. And they're oh, well, Mike Shanahan must be thinking this. And then it's almost like the media gives Shanahan something to say in the press conference. And that's really the way it felt to me. Was he made the decision. It was a bad decision. The theories begin. Then they latch onto one of those theories and go, oh, yeah, we're just going to run with that. Versus Shanahan just going up there and going, I'm a dumbass. I have no idea what I'm doing. or what would have been the best is I think Kirk Cousins gives us the best chance to win, which would have been worse. It just horrible. And then so Shanahan goes out and gives his little speech saying that they want to rest RG3. First of all, RG3 could go out and walk out in the street and get hit by a bus tomorrow. You don't know. And how are you helping his development? I mean, how are you helping him get game experience, read defenses, learn the game? And this just completely blows me away. You know, and you have the opposite of this with your hometown team, my hometown team, but your team with the Bears, with their situation with Luke McClown. I'm still never going to get this guy's name right. Even after his performance on Monday night against the Lions, the Cowboys, and that horrible defense. But now you're seeing the spin machine turning for McCown, and how the Bears can just let Jay Cutler ride off in the sunset and let him go because Mark Trestman's a genius and he can make anything work. And that's another one where you can, and being from Chicago and seeing all these bad quarterback decisions they've made over the years, this sort of feels familiar to the both of us, doesn't it?
We got to get Orkman in there. This Grossman's no good.
There's so many examples through the years of the backup quarterback being the most popular guy in town. I suspect it's that way in most every city, but definitely in Chicago. That's the place that I lived for 35 years, so that's the place that I'm obviously most familiar with, and that's exactly how they act there. Whoever the backup is, that's the guy they want to see. But it's almost understandable because throughout the years, the starting quarterback has never really been a great shape. You know, you're not talking about Hall of Famers when you talk about the list of Chicago Bears starting quarterbacks. You're talking about Jim McMahon is the best of the bunch in the modern era, and he wasn't shit. Eric Kramer had one great year, but overall he was meh. I don't want to start the list, but if I get started, I might have to, Cordell Stewart, Chad Hutchinson, Craig Krenzel, Kyle Orkman. That is a nasty list. Peter Tom Willis, Jim Harbaugh, Mike Tomczak, just on and on with just these mediocre Jim Miller quarterbacks.
Steve Stenstrom.
And of course, of course all these backups are going to be popular because the starters suck. And that's why I'm sort of upset with the whole narrative of oh, my God, Josh McCown is the hot hand. You got to stick with the hot hand. You can't let Jay Cutler come back in. Jay Cutler's not just one of these guys. Jay Cutler's the best quarterback in the fucking history of the Bears, and it's really not close. Now, that's not to say he's perfect. That's not to say he's going to the Hall of Fame. But under no circumstance, when Cutler's healthy, is he a worse option than Josh fucking McCown? Enough with this already. Come on. Just get a brain in your head. We're not talking about some guy that's been held down all his career and never got a chance to shine, and now he's finally getting his opportunity to show what he's made of. He was coaching high school football last year. He played in the league for 10 years before this, and nobody ever heard of him because he sucked. And now he's having a great hot streak. I'm happy for him. I have no ill will towards Josh McCown at all. I'm glad he's going on this wonderful hot streak. It's going to earn him another backup contract probably with the Bears next season, and that puts, another $600,000 or $800,000 in his pocket that he wouldn't have had otherwise. Good for him. I'm happy for him. Please do not mistake this hot streak with he's a better option than Jay Cutler, who's the best quarterback in the history of the fucking Bears. Don't do that. It's stupid. There's a lot of smart people, a lot of people that I respect out there that have this opinion. Jason LaConfora was on Twitter espousing this opinion that they need to just throw Cutler away next year and bring back McCown with some, long-term deal. Who gives a long-term deal to a 35-year-old journeyman quarterback? Who does that? It's completely ludicrous. Some people are just losing their minds because of the streak that McCown's on. And like I said, it's easy to do that in Chicago because all the starters have been crap, so it's easy to fall back on that stance. But you got to bring the backup in. But Jay Cutler's a little different. He's not just some guy. Jay Cutler was doing very well in his system, too, before he got hurt, let's not forget. So the whole thing just makes my head want to explode.
Yeah, I mean, we can go down the list of backup quarterbacks who've gone on a hot streak that have never turned into anything more than just a backup quarterback that went on a hot streak. I mean, the Giants won a Super Bowl with Jeff Hostetler on a hot streak. I don't seem to remember Phil Simms getting cut or after that happened, you know, or you know what, this Hot Fettler guy, he won us the Super Bowl. Let's get rid of our franchise quarterback now because this other guy won us the Super Bowl, or the contract that Scott Mitchell got, or the contract that Matt Cassel got, or the random few good games or streaky good games you get out of a guy like John Kitna. Josh McCown is part of that group. He's not part of.
Didn't you just see a guy like that live on Sunday?
That would be Matt Flynn, who's capable of getting hot for a few games. I don't think any of the papers up here are saying, let's get rid of this Rodgers guy because Matt Flynn had a decent game against a horrible pass defense. And the Cowboys and the Falcons are both horrible defensive teams. So, yeah, it's great. Yeah, you can go in and you can shred a bad defense. Good for you. Everybody up in this part wants Aaron Rodgers back right now because the Packers just have such a clear-cut path to the playoffs right now that they could get Rodgers back if he's healthy, go on a run here against three beatable teams, and all of a sudden they win the division, and that's not a team I don't think people really want in the playoffs. This is very similar to the way they did it last time they made the playoffs.
I would not want to see Aaron Rodgers across the field if I were in the playoffs. I know that for sure. You know who two quarterbacks are that are much better than backups and definitely better than replacement-level Josh McCown and will not be asked to stand down for their backup anytime soon will be Phillip Rivers and Peyton Manning, who get to square off tomorrow night in Denver, Colorado, in our final Thursday night game. This is it, Jason. This is our last Wednesday of this season where we got to bother making a Thursday night pick at the end of the show. So we've come a long way since the beginning of the season. It will be Phillip Rivers and the Chargers, 6-7, technically still in the AFC playoff race. If they go on a streak and run out the season with these last four in a row, they can make it in. Coming off a beatdown of the New York Giants on Sunday, yet another one of the many games that I lost this weekend. And now they go into Denver against Peyton Manning, and yet another game I lost, the Denver Broncos, who decided to go down to the Tennessee Titans early by double digits, and let's just rally back and throw all over the field and put up 50-some-odd points on the Tennessee Titans. So Denver coming off of that beating, 11-2, perfect 7-0 at home, going for a perfect home record if they win this game. And San Diego, a 10.5-point underdog going into Denver. San Diego gets 10.5 at the Broncos. Jason, what's your pick?
Well, I'm taking the Chargers here. I don't know what you had me pegged for taking. Probably had me pegged for taking the Broncos. I'm going to go with the Chargers here. That's a big number, and I think this is going to be a very high-scoring game. I know the Thursday night games tend not to be. Neither one of these teams really play a whole lot of defense. Everyone talks about Denver's offense. They have one of the worst defenses in the league. They give up chunks. They give up chunks to bad teams. And I think this is going to be the Peyton Manning, Phillip Rivers show back and forth. I definitely like the Chargers to stay within 10.5. I'm going to go something along the lines of 41-37. So take the over.
Wow. I'm with you. I like the over. I love the over. I think the over-under is about 51, I think I saw. I love that over. But I'm going to make it a little interesting, and I'll go ahead and take the Broncos to cover that number. It is a big number. They did only beat the Chargers by 8 points in Week 10, 28-20 in San Diego. I think it's going to be that high scoring that it almost doesn't matter what the number is. I like 45-34. It could be 45-37. It could be 41-37. It could be any of those things. So I guess what I'm saying is, I don't have nearly as much confidence in the number, but I'll take Denver anyway, just to make it interesting. That'll do it for our live show. We will see you on the other side. Jason, we are now into our after show portion.
Yeah, we made it another show down. This is getting to be old hat now. It's got to be 30 shows or something along those lines for us now. It's just amazing how this is going since when we started. So I'm really enjoying this format as well. You know, definitely trimmed this up since people don't know we've had the blog. our picks are usually marathon sessions. I mean, we would take 2 hours to go through and do our picks. So the people are definitely, they think we talk a lot. They haven't heard anything.
No. Yeah, we have to do our picks before the show and trim all the fat, because we could go off on tangents and go down rabbit holes, and next thing you know, it's been a half hour since we made a pick, and we're like, what were we talking about? So it's really easy for us to do that.
What game were we picking? I mean, I've asked that many times over the years when we're doing our picks, and just, you know, or if it's a pick we just don't want to make, we'll talk about something else. Let's go completely off on a tangent, and then all of a sudden it's a half an hour's gone by, and they, wait a minute, we're supposed to make a pick, right? There's a game. I won't miss the Thursday night games, that's for sure. not a big fan. I don't really get up for them. They're very rarely a compelling matchup. I mean, if it's a good game, it's usually by accident. So
the quality is not very good usually. And not just talking about the matchup itself. I'm talking about even when it's good teams, they're all still so hurting from the car crash they went through on Sunday that they usually aren't able to put forth their best effort on Thursday, and it just makes for a lackluster game. I really can't remember the last Thursday night game that I would classify as, wow, that was a good game. I really remember that game, you know.
No, usually the Thursday night game will consist of just bizarre things will happen. You'll get some really strange covers. I mean, you're always going to have those, but you'll just get the ones that just feel really odd. Like, this just does not feel like this result would happen if this was a regular Sunday game. You just see some really weird things. Teams that'll be sluggish. Teams that'll just show up not prepared and just get their doors blown off, and there's no rhyme or reason to anything that happens on Thursdays. I'm not just saying that because I have a ridiculously awful Thursday record this year. If it wasn't for Thursday, I'd be having a hell of a season. I won't miss Thursdays. That's the thing. So I was the man on the scene on Sunday. I get to do. Got to go to the Atlanta-Green Bay game. You know, being a Falcons fan, it's not very often that I have them show up in my neck of the woods. So whenever they make the trip to Lambeau, I do try to get tickets and go. So we bought our tickets before the season started when we saw that, because that originally was going to be the Sunday night primetime game. And, you know, before the season started, you would have thought, wow, Packers Falcons on a Sunday night prime time, this is going to be just an awesome matchup. I mean, it's not that often that I actually get to see Atlanta come up here and they're good, and that trend continued. They weren't very good. they didn't play particularly well. They had one good drive on offense to start the game. Did manage to get after Matt Flynn, get a sack, you know, deep field position, get another touchdown, and then one of the flukiest plays you'll ever see were from where I was sitting. I was in the new upper deck section at Lambeau, and there are no bad seats at Lambeau Field. It's very hard to find a bad seat in a football stadium anywhere I've ever been. But we're in the front row, so we had a clear view right over everything, sort of an isometric view over the stadium, you know, angle to the end zone. Could see everything going on, even when stuff was happening on the other end. You always have a good feel for what's happening. And the Sean Weatherspoon pick six, from my vantage point up in the upper, just looked like an incomplete pass. So I completely tuned out to the play. And a few seconds go by, and the next thing I know, they're still playing. I was like, what's going on? You know, nobody around me knew what was going on. but he's running. He's running with the ball. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's going to be a touchdown. But how? And then you see the replay. And, yeah, they, one of the Falcon defenders kicked the ball up in the air about a foot off the ground and right into Sean Weatherspoon's hands. And the Packers gave up. I don't think they even paid any attention to what was going on because they were just kind of running around. They were on the field and thought it was an incomplete pass, I would guess. And so that turns it into a 21-10 game going into halftime. Atlanta didn't score again. But their offense hadn't done a whole lot. In the fourth quarter, it got a little interesting. Matt Bryant lined up for a 52-yard field goal that was on target but fell short. So then Atlanta gets the ball back again. They get to the exact same spot on fourth down. Obviously, they went for it because if you're short from that distance a few minutes before, you're not going to make it this time. And that ended up being incomplete. Then they get the ball back again. It's like Green Bay just kept giving Atlanta the ball back. You know, they just kept going three and out once they got that lead at 22-21. But Atlanta, going into a pretty stiff breeze, couldn't do it. It was a good game. I mean, overall, you know, I was happy to be there. It definitely had a good time, but my God, was it cold. I've never been so cold. I had layers. My layers had layers, you know, and it was, you know, like, T-shirt, flannel shirt, sweater, jacket, you know, like thermal underwear, pants over that, three layers of socks, big boots. I felt like I was about to walk on the moon. When we got done with the game and drove back, we stopped at my buddy's house because it was a group of us that went to the game. And I peeled down to just the, because we were going to dinner, so I got rid of all the layers and just went, you know, sweater and jeans, and I felt 50 pounds lighter. Just losing all the layers, it was, but it was very, it was necessary because as soon as I walked out into the cold without any of those layers, it was a beeline right to the car and get in the car. So those layers did come in handy for kickoff temperature was 13 degrees, did not feel like 13. And we had a wind pretty much in our face for the whole second half. That was pretty – that same breeze Atlanta was kicking into, it wasn't just affecting the field, it was affecting us. And, yes, so alcohol and hot chocolate were also factors in helping make it through the game. But I know, you know, we talked about it with the backup quarterbacks. Yeah, nobody up here is clamoring for more Matt Flynn. That was his first win in – six tries, or at least the first win of a Packers backup in six tries, because we've seen Seneca Wallace and Scott Tolzien and then Matt Flynn, and it's just been, and yeah, nobody's been the hot shit. Nobody's been trying to run Aaron Rodgers out of town. Let's trade this Rodgers guy. He's a bum. They're all praying that he feels good enough to play this week against Dallas, because if there's a defense that you want to see Aaron Rodgers play against, it's the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah. But do you think if they had a Josh McCown up there for all of these games and managed to win a few of them, that would there still be a clamoring for Aaron Rodgers, or would there be this stupidity like there is in Chicago? We got to get rid of Rodgers and keep this McCown guy.
It's different here. See, you don't have this history of ineptitude at the quarterback position in Green Bay like they have in Chicago. It's like, you know, you and I have seen this a lot because we've watched a lot of Bears-Packers games. But every time there's a Bears-Packers game, they would show the list. Here's the list of Packers starting quarterbacks for the last 22, 23 years. Here's the list of the Bears starting quarterbacks for the last 22 or 23 years.
Yeah.
And you look at the list for the Packers, and it was Favre Rodgers. And then you look at the list for the Bears, and it would be
Don't say it. I already went down the list. Please, don't go there
through
again.
The list, but
I don't want to throw
you've
up.
You've seen a few more names added to that list because Rodgers is, you know, nobody's Brett Favre. Nobody's going to play every game at that position. Everybody's after you. Of course, Rodgers also doesn't, you know, he's not addicted to painkillers or anything along those lines. We won't go down that path.
Right.
So, yeah, the list is growing a little bit for Green Bay, but, yeah, nobody's in a hurry to run Aaron Rodgers out of town. This isn't Washington. They're not entertaining the idea, even though they were talking about it on the TV, of entertaining the idea of shutting him down so that he was healthy going into next season. It was funny, when it was Aaron Rodgers they were talking about doing that, everybody was just like, no, you can't do that. He's a competitor. He wants to play. If he's cleared by the coaching staff, get him out there. And then you've got this RG3 situation, right, where all the pundits are saying the exact opposite thing. Makes no sense to me at all. He's healthy. He should play. That's it. End of story. And Matt Ryan's not getting benched to save his health, right? Atlanta's not going anywhere. They're 3-10.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
So real quick, got three divisions in the NFC that are all real tight within a game of each other. You kind of talked about last week about the NFC East, that you trust the Eagles more than the Cowboys, and judging by the Week 14 results, that would be the right choice to make. But in the NFC North, with those three teams, where do you see that playing out? There's 3 weeks to go, and there's Detroit at 7-6, Chicago at 7-6, Green Bay at 6-6-1. How in the world is that going to play out?
If you were to tell me that Aaron Rodgers was healthy and he could play all three of these games, knowing that all Green Bay has to do is win these three games they have left, Dallas, Pittsburgh, and Chicago, win those three, and then Detroit loses one. So if I have to bet Aaron Rodgers is going to win three in a row and Detroit's going to lose one game, that's what I would go with. But I can't do that if Rodgers isn't playing. So if Rodgers doesn't start on Sunday, if the Packers somehow can still beat Dallas and Rodgers can come back for the last two games, I like Green Bay. So the equation is really Aaron Rodgers. He's the key. If he can play, I think they can run that table, and I think they could do that. If that doesn't happen and they just keep doing this, you know, week-by-week injury thing with him, then
I think the Lions and the Bears.
Yeah, and who do I? And if I have to trust one of those two teams more than the other, I've got to take the Bears. I mean, the Bears have no defense, but they are better coached. If you go on all the variables and I have to choose between Mark Trestman and Jim Schwartz, the Schwartz is not with me. I'm going to go with Trestman.
And in the NFC South, New Orleans at 10-3. Putting on the show on Sunday night, Carolina at 9-4, still got a meeting with New Orleans in Charlotte in a couple of weeks. How do you see that shaking down?
I'm still going to go with the Saints here. I picked the Saints to win the division before the season started, so I'm going to stick with my preseason pick.
Okay. Very important message that I want to get out before we go. Nelson Mandela, I got to give my little shout-out and tribute to Nelson Mandela. In the mid-'80s, in the late 80s, he brought me the term apartheid or apartheid. I didn't know what that meant, but thanks to him, I knew what that meant. It's Thursday, April 12, 1990. I'm in Tribune Tower competing for the Chicagoland Spelling Bee, and the word apartheid comes up, and my opponent, the great Renato Diaz, wherever he is out there, shout-out to him. He doesn't know apartheid. He didn't know it. I get the word. I get the next word, meringue. I'm a big fat kid. Of course, I know about meringue. And I am your 1990 Chicagoland Spelling Bee champion. And I owe that to one Nelson Mandela. Thank you, Nelson, up in heaven. We are out of here. I've got a recap of Week 14, and so does Jason, up on the blog, which would be in much less detail, that blogspot.com. We will be back on, I believe, Saturday night for our next show, for our pick show, week 15 coming up. And by the way, next week, of course, Cass and Michael from Football Fan Rush Radio scheduled to join us. So we are out of here. I am Dre, he is Jay, and we will see you on Saturday.